Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rasslan. Today we have BFM's very own Umpagan Umpake Pakan.
Hello, Cam.
Hello. And we have educator, musician,
Troubadour.
Asmo Yunor.
Hey.
Great to have you here.
Yes, that's good.
And our three topics this week, the word culture is in all of them, so I think we're in the right place. Topic number one is cultural appropriation. Topic number two is cultural exploitation. And finally, topic number three is geography and culture with Kuala Lumpur. So, Uma, cultural exploitation raises its ugly head again.
Appropriation.
Yeah.
He's exploitation.
Oh, sorry. Same thing.
Not that Asmael, you know, exploits culture in any way. But so the movie Ghost in the Shell was released in cinemas. It is, of course, based on a Japanese anime and manga. This is a Hollywood interpretation of the film. And the movie kind of garnered some scandal when they cast Scarlett Johansson in the lead role, because obviously it's out of Japan and there's this perception, or I guess, you know, belief that the character being Japanese, when you cast Scarlett Johansson, it's whitewashing, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the Japanese creators of the manga and anime have come out and said, we don't understand this, it's no big deal, we like mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson. And of course, in America, with their current baggage of, you know, just a sexist, racist Hollywood and Oscars so white and all of that stuff, it kind of takes on a life of its own, and it becomes this huge conversation about whitewashing and cultural appropriation and, you know, Hollywood making money off the Japanese and, you know, the white people exploiting the underclasses and all of that stuff, right? So this conversation always comes up when something like this happens. And I was thinking about it because I know you would have seen on your Facebook feeds just a series, I'm sure, of op-eds as this movie came out. 100 different people writing their opinions on this particular matter. Now, how I look at it is, I think it really depends on the society and culture you're raised in. When I hear the quotes by the Japanese creators, and they come from a predominantly monolithic society, right? It's all, primarily all Japanese people, all speaking a singular language, all looking very similar.
Or looking very similar, okay.
I'm sorry, yeah. I know I went there. So for them, this idea of minority oppression when it comes to, at least when it comes to along the lines of race, is not necessarily a major issue. So their entertainment industry, for example, did not put a specific color of person above another. It wasn't dominated by a specific race or religion or class, right? And I think they have a very different approach to these things, a very different approach to what they call cultural oppression. I think the same goes for us in Malaysia with certain pockets. So we're slightly more accepting of these things in Malaysia because we've been beaten down by racism for so long that a lot of us just throw up our hands and just go, whatever. But now I think more and more Malaysians are beginning to speak up about it. So, for example, if you see a Malay actor portray, say, a Sabahan or a Sarawakian, you know, I mean, people are making noise about it, and rightly so, because there are Sabahan and Sarawakian actors who could do the job, right?
That's true. That's true.
But oftentimes, they use the same excuse that Hollywood often uses, which is, oh, we want to cast someone who is a box office favorite.
Well, that's a perfectly valid reason. I mean, movies are expensive to make, and you want to make some money back.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, if you were making the life of Tunku Abdul Rahman, and if Julia Roberts was available,
I have no idea what role she would play in that movie.
you'd find something.
I'd watch it.
There was this movie that Jessica Alba played a Dayak lady.
That's right.
It was a really terrible movie because they created a myth within that culture that didn't exist. That's problematic. Yeah.
That is problematic because you don't just appropriate, you actually invent,
you invent something
that's not there. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the time, didn't Jessica Alba come out and say that she had some Asian blood in her or something like that, right?
So it's
a perennial problem in Hollywood. And the reason I wanted to talk about it today was I was curious as to how it affects someone like us here in Malaysia and the average Malaysian, because we appropriate everything. We don't just appropriate from each other, as in the Melayu, China, India, Dandelion Line appropriation. We also appropriate from the West a lot.
Speaking as an average Malaysian.
As you are, Cameron.
You mentioned that the Japanese didn't seem to be upset, but you're talking about the people who were well rewarded because they were the creators of it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, they made a lot of money out, so I don't think they're going to be complaining.
But when you think about manga or anime, right? I mean, look at the characters, the way they're sort of created, the way they're drawn is a bit ambiguous anyway.
That's right. They have a look. Yeah. And I don't know if that is consciously done on their part to, like, you know, make sure that their manga and anime travel as far and wide as possible.
One of my favorite movies is Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes.
And, you know, I watched a lot of movies from the 50s, 60s, you know, way back. Back then, it was perfectly acceptable. And when I first watched these movies, it never crossed my mind as being a problem that Alec Guinness would play King Faisal in Arabella. Right. And Anthony Quinn, who is, I think, of some sort of Mexican ancestry, or Yul Brynner would be the King of Thailand. Well, it's a problem in Thailand. It's still banned. King and I are still banned up there.
True.
And then I remember when David Lean made Passage to India in the mid-80s, he had Alec Guinness again playing a sort of Indian guru of some description.
And then you had Ben Kingsley
as Gandhi.
But that, he is actually half Indian.
Okay.
So that's okay. Don't worry. I guess the worst representation of that is Mickey Rooney, isn't it, in Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Oh, yeah.
Playing
they're playing a very stereotype.
Not even stereotypical, just
caricature.
To the
almost.
Point of caricature of a Japanese character, the Japanese neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
It was awful.
But then again, in Malaysia, one of the still incredibly popular TV show from the 1970s is Mind Your Language.
Yes, sir.
Where
you have a group of
diverse characters,
caricatures, being taught English and living up to or living down to their racial stereotypes.
Thousand apologies.
That's true.
So I don't know. So my question was, you know, how does it affect us as Malaysians who appropriate everything? I think the argument only works or holds water if it's appropriating downwards. So if it's someone in a superior position appropriating your culture to profit from it, then it's a bad thing, right?
Yep.
So when a white person comes along and steals your story, Cam Razlan, and then makes $100 million at the box office.
Story about natives.
I guess. And if I didn't make any money out of it. You mean?
And if you didn't make any
money. That would be terrible.
There you go.
Oh, my God. But I guess if I was played by Julia Roberts, I wouldn't be so upset, would I? I mean, that'd be nice.
I'll watch that movie, man.
Yeah, me too.
Can I just point out that Julia Roberts isn't even the hottest person in Hollywood right now?
Okay, if I was being played by Scarlett Johansson,
I would watch that movie.
Yeah. So you're going to go watch the movie anyway, are you?
I am. I have multiple times.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I have.
Any good?
It's all right.
Asmil, would you?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I'm completely disinterested. I really couldn't care less. So that's cultural exploitation. Bad.
Cultural appropriation.
Same thing. Same thing. But anyway, from that to the other thing. Asmil, topic number two, cultural exploitation.
Yes. Yeah, I was on a trip recently and I did my Beatles pilgrimage. I ended up in Liverpool. So for me, being there and like walking around, getting the map, I was very excited, booked my Airbnb. Even the first question I asked Airbnb, can I walk to the Beatles Museum? I said, yeah, man, it's all right. It's 20 minutes. Walk there. So semangat, you know, walk there, go there, paid my fee. Then the ticket, they say, yeah, you can use this ticket for 2 days. Like, wow, which
I can come back tomorrow?
I can come back tomorrow. I didn't, but I didn't have time. But I went in and did the whole thing. They had everything. I mean, but it dawned on me because that was the second day I was there. The night before, I was already in town. So I checked out the typical places, Matthew Street, the cavern. So first thing I saw was a cavern bar on the left, and there was a bronze statue of John Lennon. Mm-hmm. And there was this busker next to it. I was playing. This busker was really good, and I enjoyed it. And I went into, I looked at the bar, I was like, wait, it was called Cavern Club. Then I saw a small print saying, the original Cavern Club is across the street. Oh, okay. There's a cavern bar, or the cavern club is there. Okay, went there, went down, saw some guys performing. You know what? The busker was better than the guy playing down there in the actual club. So I got up. I got out again. I noticed this other signage saying, this is the original entrance to the original Cavern Club. So I just went into the simulacra of two ideas of what is the Cavern Club. And next to the Cavern Club, there's a place called Sergeant Pepper's. And you walk down, there's a bar called Lennon's Bar. And it's just, you know, then it dawns on you, like, okay. You know what I walked back from Liverpool with? Mm-hmm. I didn't buy any. I just bought a fridge magnet that was a bottle opener from the Beatles story, the museum. That's about it. That's
but
all
what were you either expecting or hoping to find?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think I was a bit naive, being a fan. You know, I thought I'd go there and there'd be nobody. And I'll be the only one, you know, scrounging the dirt. Like, oh, this is, oh, I found a cavern, you know. Like, yeah, but nevertheless, on the positive side, I think the energy was strong. I think there's a thin line between celebrating and exploiting. I feel that, you know. But I think you have to teeter that line. It's very important.
Well, when I was growing up in England, I knew a guy from Liverpool, very funny fella. And he was saying the worst thing that ever happened, wherever he went in the world, if he said he was from Liverpool, people would start asking about the Beatles.
Yeah.
So his response was always, I've never heard of them. And it's, you know, the Beatles. I'm sorry, I have no idea.
That's good.
That's the only way to respond, yeah. Let me see, yeah.
But, I mean, Liverpool, for Liverpudlians, I would imagine, is other things other than the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Beatles were, they left Beatles.
They
left Liverpool straight away, first thing they could.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I started to get interested in the history of why Liverpool, you know, a port town. And, you know, very singular. The people there have, you know, the accents and the culture is very Liverpoolians, right? What do you call it?
Liverpoolian?
Scousers.
Scousers.
You know? Scousers. Everybody sounded like John. For me, everybody sounded like John, Paul, George and Ringo to me. They all had that, you know.
Well, yeah. Actually, Scousers are the one people who also say the word la.
Ah.
In what context?
In much the same context.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
wow.
I didn't know that.
Awesome.
Yeah. But you see, here's the thing. Everywhere you go that has this kind of cultural heritage, if you will, eventually gets exploited by tourists, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, when I was in Italy, I often wonder whether the Italians themselves, when they walk past, you know, 100 statues of David lining their streets, whether they're actually completely jaded by it,
or
when they go to the academia and they look upon David, whether they can still see it with some awe. Mm. So I'm always wondering if the Liverpudlians still can walk into the Beatles Museum like you did and see it with some awe, or is it just, does it just wash over them now?
Well, probably, you know,
everywhere.
You don't even go there. If you're in Liverpool, you went to the Beatles Museum? Come on, man. You
know, I'm trying to think of...
Well, the reason I say that is because, you know, I still look, and call me naive for this, but I still look upon, say, our Twin Towers with a sense of awe. I think it's an architectural marvel and engineering, true. What they did with those exoskeletons and all that stuff. It's pretty cool. And I don't know if Americans do the same thing with the Empire State Building anymore, right? They're just like, it's just another one of those buildings. But, you know, when it was built, whoa. Mm.
Yeah, but you're talking about places that are just places in and of themselves.
But they're iconic to that city, though.
I think an equivalent... I mean, I know many Malaysians who've made pilgrimages to Liverpool, but to go to Liverpool Football Club.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And most of them have walked away very satisfied.
Okay.
Because that building, the stadium, is not in and of itself a beautiful building, but it has been the place in which things have happened.
Okay.
The things have actually happened.
No, you're right. I take that back, actually. It was a false comparison on my part, because with the Beatles and with Liverpool, you're talking about fandom and obsession as well.
Mm.
Unless you're a fan of skyscrapers, the Twin Towers and the Empire State may not be your thing.
Yeah.
You may not necessarily travel to New York just to see the Empire State. You could be a fan of An Affair to Remember,
or King Kong.
Or King Kong. Yeah.
No, I think the Empire State is...
It crosses over, right? It's got a little bit of pop culture in it.
Yeah. And it's got King Kong climbing it and all
that. It really epitomizes America. A certain, you know, that boom time America in a way that I don't think that the Twin Towers...
Well, not yet, my friend. Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones wasn't enough in
maybe,
that film.
Maybe.
But yeah, football fans are a perfect example, the way... Ezra talks about visiting the home of United.
Because I'm completely not a football fan, so I went Manchester and Liverpool, and I didn't go to the stadium at all.
Mm. Well,
when I was
go.
Manchester, I was looking for the Hacienda, and turned out it's
club shut down. Now.
Yeah, shut down. Yeah, and probably while I was staying, it's quite nearby.
Hacienda, folks, is the club that was big in the 80s and 90s.
No, but they speak of it with religious overtones, don't they, when they visit these stadiums.
Yeah, but you don't get the same sort of valorization like the Beatles, you know, Hacienda, it's gone.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Beatles. I have never been tempted to go to Liverpool or to the Cavern Club, because I think for me...
the same thing, like the experience would be...
But it doesn't happen. Yeah. It didn't happen in a place. It's not in a place.
Yeah, it's not a place. That's what I learned.
Yeah, I mean, I walked past the place where John Lennon got shot, and I found that very sad and moving.
What about Abbey Road Studios?
I've been there.
Ah,
but that was on the album. I walked across the crossing and everything. Okay, well, I'm sorry you had a bad time there. Was it a bad time?
No, it wasn't a bad time. But it made me realize that, okay... That means the music kind of transcended all these very physical things. It went just beyond that.
Just to wrap up, though, I mean, if your whistling and your head come together, say, a late Beatles song, you wouldn't associate that with Liverpool, though, would you?
Yeah, that would be more...
Abbey Road.
More global. Yeah.
More global. yeah. More so the Beatles, you know...
So they kind of became bigger than where they came from. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay, that's cultural exploitation and appropriation. And next we're going to do... Culture as Geography for Kuala Lumpur. Wow. Here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's... a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Uma Pagan, Amke Pagan, and Azmul Yunor. And now, geography. Geography and cultural impact. Kuala Lumpur. Now, KL is rare as a capital city or in any major city in that it is not a port city. It kind of grown and grown and grown until it has grown to the sea, but it was not originally at the sea. The river is not navigable. You cannot send boats up there. You had to walk to Damansara. I don't know where Damansara is these. It's Damansara Kim, Damansara Medan, Damansara. Yeah, take your pick. And then Klang beyond that. So I'm wondering if the geography of this town has had an impact on the way that people are. If cities have a character... what is the character of this city and what's geography got to do with it? Talking about Liverpool earlier, I mean, that's a classic port city. Mm. The Beatles, the legend goes, you know, they were exposed to this American blues music by sailors coming over with records. London makes sense because it's a port city. All these cities make sense. Kuala Lumpur kind of doesn't make sense. And it's actually hard to understand why it exists and how come it is a capital city. I mean, I have my own particular theories. Because it was actually in the hinterland, it was built up essentially by the British and by, say, tin miners, so that you had people like Frank Swettenham and Yatlaloy, you know, big characters who determined it. Frank Swettenham built these beautiful buildings, which kind of like had a city had to coalesce around. But still, it's not a port city. And Uma, we were talking earlier, and you were saying how people in Kuala Lumpur have no concept of north, south, east, and west.
No, they don't. I mean, it's in our points of reference to the city are based on landmarks and landmarks and directions from where we grew up and lived.
Yeah.
Right? So if you want to go to town, where is town? Oh, town is about 15 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
That's your point of reference, as opposed to say, hey, where do you live in London? Oh, I live in the south.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone immediately understands what that means.
There's the river that splits.
Correct.
The city. And South London is very different from North London.
No, but
they have different characteristics.
I find that incredibly fascinating with our perception of time and space. Yeah. Because as we are navigating a city, And if we have no concept of north, south, east, or west, our relationship to the city is so different from when I was in England. The first time someone told me, "Oh, you know, you got to head north for about this long and take the tube line north, and you'll come to my place or whatever." Mm-hmm. I had no clue what they were talking about.
It'd be a landmark.
That's so true. Yeah.
I grew up
in Harkey, right, Jangguni, and I never thought of north, south, and west at all.
Yeah,
it's again, like you said, landmarks.
So we have in Kuala Lumpur, we have a spatial awareness that I think is unique to each of us. I map together places. Pataling Jaya's Section 5's connection to Damansara Kim has to follow certain routes, but it's my own particular map.
We map these cities in KL, in particular, we map these places based on travel time, traffic, food, where we grew up, where we went to school. Mm. We have all of these small elements that we kind of throw in together, right? I mean, what does it mean when you tell someone, oh, I live 35 minutes from the city? The city in my head is basically refers to the heart of KL, which is now KLCC, right?
Well, yes. Well, tell me, what is for you the heart of KL? Well, what is downtown KL? Where is the center?
So now in my head, it is that golden triangle area, that artificial construct.
Mm. Okay.
Of course, it used to be a different... It used to be something different when Klang was popular, Ampang used to be a huge deal. Mm. Ampang's kind of moved away into the fringes now, right? Mm. And so, so now, what does 35 minutes mean? 35 minutes means on a regular day.
Mm.
But if it's a public holiday, it's only 15 minutes to get to see. You know what I mean? Because traffic is good.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
The sense of direction came clearer to me when I moved out of the city when I was 12. Then I started realizing, where am I? Then I started to look on the map. Oh, okay, where I moved is south of the city. Okay, what does that mean? Before this, I had no idea where north, south, east, west was, where I lived in KL.
Yeah,
so and it didn't matter.
And also, road names.
Yeah.
I don't know the names of...
They keep on changing it, man. The road that I grew up with, I don't know what it's called now. It's changed 2-3 times. So there's always this sense of carpet being pulled under you all the time, too.
But the road name situation feels like, at least in the heart of KL, because of, I guess, the political importance of Kuala Lumpur, it feels like arbitrary based on the politics of the day, right?
Yeah.
So when they changed all the Mat Saleh names in the center of town to suddenly reflect Melaka names, so there's Tumpera, Hang Tua, Hang Jebat, all this stuff, right, in the heart of KL, and there's a theme running through it.
Yeah.
But of course, it doesn't really mean anything.
No, not now,
But nevertheless, it dehistoricizes stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, dehistoric. Yeah. And also, I mean, like, what I find an interesting one is Birch Road is now named Maharaj Leela.
After his killer.
But it's not, though. That's the
it's
thing.
It's a different
it's not.
Maharaj Leela.
It's a different birch.
Oh, it's a different birch.
Birch, not it's a different Maharaj Leela.
No, it's, it's actually named after the son of...
Oh, not JWW.
No, it's his son. Now, his son was actually a much-respected civil servant.
Oh, well, there you go.
So the original Birch was considered a very arrogant and rough man. Mm. But his son was quite the opposite. Because his father had been killed for being that.
I don't want to be killed in the shower.
So he learned. And then, as years go by, then come independence, it was then renamed after the man who killed his father.
Right, which is just as bad. but Cam, how does that affect? I mean, you spent time in both the UK and here, and I'm curious how you code switch the right word, because when you're in the UK, you obviously have to shift your thinking about spaces based on the English way.
No, because the English way, I think I can say the European way, is that cities are very old and they grew from a certain point, be it a bend in the river. Where two roads crossed.
Yeah.
And then you can see on the map, there's a sort of circular growing of it.
Yeah.
And you can see where the city walls used to be. So you know, I know anyway, how to get around, because instantly, when I go to any city, how it grew.
There's some sort of logical growth.
Yeah, correct. And then like in London, for example, it's the M25, am I right? The ring road?
That's the big one. There's another ring road inside. And then there are smaller Roman ring roads, medieval ones inside again. And whereas, of course, Kuala Lumpur, it's much more like Los Angeles. I think the nearest city that I've ever come across that's like Kuala Lumpur is Los Angeles.
There is Valley, yeah.
It's Valley, but also the motor car determined where places could grow. I mean, you couldn't have had Pataling Jaya, which was just sort of staked out in the middle of nowhere, and then that would could exist, because you had to have the car for it to then, for the people then to drive to Kuala Lumpur back in the day. Mm-hmm. So our geography is, I think, determined by off the modern landscape by it not being a port city. So there's no central focus. There's no docks. And then the car, and therefore the road. So we don't really know where the hell we are.
Yeah, and that's why it keeps on changing. They could change the main bus station to some other place, and that becomes a new center, right?
You're right, right? So the center would have moved from Masjid Jami along. I mean, there was a time when that was probably the center of all the activity in Kuala Lumpur, right?
The landmarks of KL kept on changing as we grew up.
Correct. But also, it's not a sentimental town. I mean, or at least the people who govern this town are not sentimental, partly because they don't come from Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
They weren't born here. Yeah. People have not yet developed a sense of a love for this place. Yeah. So if you do move the bus station, or you do knock that thing down, so it's knock that building down, new road over there. No one is yet sentimental enough. Yeah. I mean, in London, which is a really ancient city, 2,000 years old, people are going to be up in arms if you go through certain areas.
I tell you what, I'm only sentimental about is the bus mini. I miss that, man.
You do?
Yeah, because I used to take the 19, I think it was 60 cents from where I stayed, and you go to Lot 10.
Oof. Just where you the misspent use of Azmil, you know.
So anyway, folks, have a think about whereabouts you live, because we are beaming out now to the Klang Valley.
Yeah.
Yes.
And your points of reference, right? Ever since you told me about this, man, I've not stopped thinking about how I refer to my place in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah. That's a starting point. So KL actually grows from your house.
Right. as it does from your house, as it does from where you live, Azmil,
KL's
right?
KL's far from me now.
And also, ask yourselves, what about your parents and your grandparents? I mean, what was their spatial awareness? Because they probably didn't come from Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah,
I mean, I would say if you were born before the year 1970... There's a good chance
you're not born in KL. Yeah,
you're not from KL.
There's nothing KL. Not much. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. So that's part of the fascinating thing about Kuala Lumpur. It's a strange place. So now we move on to our recommendations. We recommend something that we think would be of interest, and Uma's going to go first.
All right. So I'm recommending a movie, an indie movie. It's going to be screened on Astro, I think, in April. I saw it. It's called Singing in Graveyards, and it's by a Malaysian filmmaker called Bradley Liu. I interviewed him for At The Movies, so the folks at Astro had sent me a screener copy to watch. I think it premieres mid-April, if I'm not mistaken. Amazing. He's a Malaysian filmmaker based out of the Philippines. And Azmil, you're going to love this, right?
Philippines.
It's the story of this Filipino rock legend. The real life rock legend called his name is Pepe Smith.
Oh, I think I saw a trailer of this.
The movie stars the actual Pepe Smith
playing
an impersonator of Pepe Smith. It is so meta, so brilliant, because he forces him to play an impersonator for himself and therefore reflect upon his life and career as he's aging.
Amazing.
And the storyline is very simple. It was rooted in a conversation that Bradley had himself with the actual Pepe Smith, saying, "Hey, what's the best love song you've ever written?" And Pepe Smith said, "You know, I've never written a love song, because if people are happy about my music, you know, why does it have to be a romantic song?" And so this movie is based on the notion that this impersonator of Pepe Smith is trying to write the actual Pepe Smith the lyrics to his first love song.
Played by Pepe Smith.
It's called Singing in Graveyards. It's about 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's a very slow-paced movie, but it's so smart. And yeah, Malaysian boy done good in Manila.
Fantastic.
I'm just blown away. I never imagined.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Singing in Graveyards.
How do we...
People will have to... I think the easiest way to watch it is on Astro's A-List. Subscribe to that special channel. But I'm sure they're doing the film festival circuit as well. So just keep a lookout online and I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay.
Nice. Hope it comes out the international screens. Yeah.
Big screens. Oh, at GSC, right?
Yeah. Any chance, you think?
Fingers crossed.
Hopefully. Maybe we should make a pitch. Yeah.
Singing in Graveyards.
Yes. Okay. The streets.
Great. Okay. So, Azmil, what you got?
My recommendation is this Scottish indie band called Idlewild. I don't know how many of
you know. Blast from the past.
Yeah. Blast from the past, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've only met one or two other fans, and these other fans supplying me all the albums before. and I met him at a gig and saying like, yeah man, I was like, oh okay, I thought there's not many fans of this band. So when I was having that trip, so my second pilgrimage after the Beatles was going to Edinburgh, and I was like, this is Idlewild City, you know. But at the same time, of course, there's Irving Welsh, there's all these historical figures, all the authors going on there, and you start realizing like, man, it's not bad being colonized. So, because these guys, the Scottish basically, you know, used whatever they, you know, the language and the experience to really be culturally rich. And when I was listening to a lot of Idlewild's albums recently, and like, yeah, I mean, they don't sound Scottish.
Yeah.
They sound appropriated almost. Very Americanized, very R.E.M.-ish. But at the same time, there's a strong element of identity, because you start looking away at, about them as being Scottish, and you start seeing something else. So this appropriation sometimes might work, because it takes you away from the obvious things that they are, right?
Yeah.
And you start looking at, okay, what are these guys trying to say? So I want to recommend these guys. I don't know if they're that off the radar.
Well, I think, Producer Ali, we can play out with an Idlewild song. So
fantastic.
If you can think of one, then we'll do that. If not, Producer Ali, I'm sure he's completely up to speed with the
Idlewild.
People must know this band. Yeah.
yeah. Okay. So presumably when you went to Edinburgh, though, For that, you were able to do the scratching the surface and being alone while trying to find...
Oh, yes, probably with that, yeah, because there's all the J.K. Rowling cafe and all that stuff. These are all the bigger stuff, and I went to a music shop. You got any Idlewild t-shirts? No, we don't have that, man. Sorry. Okay. So I felt more authentic. I felt like I'm the only weirdo in town looking for Idlewild, not like Liverpool, where everybody's looking at the Beatles, so yeah.
Asmal, you are so cute. That is just the cutest story I've ever heard. So I want to travel with you sometime.
You'd
just be so wide-eyed and excited about everything. Okay, so that's the band, the Scottish band Idlewild. My recommendation is a little strange, but you know, the reason why I always actually think about the geography of Kuala Lumpur and the history of KL and trying to piece together, you know, how come this place exists and why is it the capital city? And because I'm reading about a book about my one of my favorite cities, Venice. And Venice is a perfect city, but it's a perfectly bizarre city. I mean, it's built in the sea, and its roads are water. It kind of makes sense in a way that Kuala Lumpur doesn't. But if you can try to understand somewhere like Venice, you can understand KL and vice versa. So my recommendation is not necessarily the book that I'm reading, but it's actually just Venice. If you haven't been, and if you can't afford it, save all your money. And one day spend it on going to Venice. It's the most amazing place.
Well, that's an Asia flight.
It really is. Venice is amazing. But can I also say that unlike Cam, Asmail and my recommendations are actually attainable.
Yeah, I know, but I'm sorry, I have to move it, but my mind is just consumed by Venice at the moment, because I'm reading about it. And
are you reading a particular book? Do you have anything to recommend?
This is called The Spirit of Venice. By a person whose name I can't remember, but it's about the history of a certain period and about the sort of mindset of the place. It's a strange city, but it's when I went there quite recently, actually, for the first time, it was like, wow, it really exists, and it's not just a backdrop in a movie. It really, and people live here.
Wow,
it's a wonderful place. So my recommendation is unattainable.
Go to Venice.
Go to Venice. Okay. So with that bombshell, we come to the end of this week's show. And only remains for me now to thank special honored guest, Asmal Yunor.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Uma Parkin, I'm K Parkin.
Thank you very much, Cam.
And myself, Cam Rastan. If you'd like to get in touch with us, like our Facebook page. Numbers haven't been great. Not doing very well out there, folks. Get it together. It's not that hard. Just go to the Facebook, press like. And you will be rewarded by a warm, fuzzy feeling. Otherwise, yes, please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we encourage our clients to participate, to recognize how essential their role in this process is. They've got to be willing to help us help them. And by working jointly in a sort of partnership, we're more likely to get the best possible outcome for our clients. And that's really the standard that our clients can fairly hold us to, is what is the best possible outcome for them. So clients who are facing divorce need to recognize that for them to succeed, they need a partnership between them and their attorney.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 650-389-1111. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.